Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Anyone can have an eating disorder. There is the stereotype that springs to mind of the too-thin teenage girl struggling with anorexia or bulimia. But many people struggle with eating disorders who don't fit that description. And many of those people don't get the help they need. That's a message that Sarah Thompson is trying to spread far and wide. Thompson will be speaking on the campuses of all three of Iowa's state universities next week. The University of Iowa on the 25th, the University of Northern Iowa on the 26th, and Iowa State University on the 27th. Thompson is a coach, consultant, and writer focused on body liberation, fat liberation, and body positivity. Their presentation at all the stops is called "But You Don't Look Like You Have an Eating Disorder and Other Avoidable Barriers to Recovery." Sarah Thompson is on the line with me now. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Charity. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for talking with me. And I know this is a story you've told many times, but I want to go back to your teenage years. Can you tell me about your personal experience with eating disorders?
Sure. My eating disorder began fully when I was 16. Before that, I had dieted a lot and had a pretty tumultuous relationship with food. And then when I was 16 was when my food consumption drastically decreased, and then maybe 8 months to a year after that began, I started binging and purging, and then I feel like looking back, I have struggled with disordered eating and an eating disorder for much of my adult life as well. And it looked different. It looked a lot like eating the right foods and thinking that I had to control what I ate so that I, you know, wouldn't lose control in other ways. But then it also, I was not eating enough food, and I was definitely compensating for a lot of things that were happening in my life. And so it was a very long road for me to find recovery later in my mid-30s.
Let's talk about the time when you were a teenager, because a lot of eating disorders go undiagnosed, period, or for a long time. In your case, you were not aware that you had an eating disorder, although you were struggling with all of those symptoms that we talk about with, you know, starving yourself, the inability to pay attention or to focus, the need to sleep all the time, that, you know, these horrible things that go along with it. And why do you think no one noticed what was going on with you?
I really believe that it was due to my size, because even after my what I was eating drastically decreased and I was starving myself, I still was at a high weight, which like what people would typically consider for somebody my height and size. And so when I lost a bunch of weight, I was actually complimented and encouraged and told that I was doing really well. And nobody questioned that, because in our culture, most fat people are rewarded for losing weight. And it really doesn't matter how a person does it. And so it's really hard to diagnose something that a doctor is going to congratulate you for.
Right. And other people in your life as well. I mean, everybody was was praising you and facilitating this eating disorder. When you were in your 30s, I mean, you said you've struggled with this for so many years. Do you feel like you have a healthy relationship with food today?
I do.
So how?
I do.
Yeah. How did that come about?
That.
What changed for you?
It's such a big question to answer, because it was such a convergence of a lot of different factors. I would say the biggest factor is that I started exploring this idea that body diversity exists and everybody isn't supposed to be a uniform BMI or height and weight for every person on the planet. And I started to explore what that meant and what that would look like and what fat acceptance was and what body positivity was. And the more that I explored that and I found people that were able to live their lives happy and free and not subscribe to much of what our culture tells us about bodies, I was able to find a new paradigm, which is body trust, and being able to learn from the people who created body trust is essentially what changed my life. And I was able to stop restricting. I was able to stop going back and forth between restricting and binging. And that was when I was able to start using the word fat and not have it mean something negative or derogatory, that it was just another description of my body, like I have brown hair and I have brown eyes.
It must be so hard to put into words what that felt like and what that feels like, but I just get the sense that it must have been such a freeing experience to suddenly be able to shake off that stigma that our society places around being fat. I mean, there's just so much shame and so much stigma on a daily basis. Can you put into words what it felt like?
It felt like the sun coming out after a rainstorm. Like, it felt like being able to breathe after, like, doggy paddling for hours, you know, like, I did a half triathlon, and the water in Lake Erie when I did it was extremely rough, and the whole time I felt like I just had to keep going so that I didn't drown. And like coming out of the water and being able to catch my breath, that's what it reminds me of. It's really a different thing to be able to see other people have it and want it and believe it, but you don't have any idea how to internalize it for yourself. And being able to do that really meant the world to me.
In traveling around and talking to people about eating disorders, in trying to help them understand that anybody can have an eating disorder, is that to help people recognize if they have an eating disorder? Is that your primary goal?
I feel like I have two primary goals. One would be that people can recognize that this disrupted relationship with food is possible to heal. That is very much what drives everything that I do, because if people don't know that it can be different, or that what they're actually doing is a problem that can be supported to change, then there isn't much hope for, like, people being able to change their lives. And the other goal that I have is education and awareness, so that other people can also be working towards preventing people from ever starting with an eating disorder.
Tell me more about that. In listening to your podcast and in reading some of your writing, one of the things that comes across very clearly is that this so-called war on obesity that, you know, mm-hmm. we talk about, when you are a person who people might consider to be obese, this war on obesity doesn't feel so much like a public health journey or a public health effort as a war on you. So what do we need to know? What do we need to understand when we talk about public health issues that affect people who, mm-hmm. you know, are overweight or would be considered overweight?
It's a great question. And the public health issue is actually people's attitudes towards fat people, not our bodies. There is a lot of research and continued research in discovering how these attitudes and the discrimination against fat people affects health. And it's pretty similar to any research that would be done on chronic stress and the lasting and long-term effects that that has, because we can also look at the effects of trauma and adverse childhood experiences and how that all plays into the health of everyone, but particularly people who are in larger bodies or may not have been in a bigger body, but then they did diet or they did have an eating disorder, and that has lasting effects on our health. The other thing that I would say is that, unless I'm quoting research, I don't use the words obese or overweight, because this is a form of pathologizing and stigmatizing bodies. We can look at the etymology of the word obese, and in Latin, it's derived from basically eating too much. And so the meaning of the word itself implies that every person is the size that they are because they've eaten too much. And this simply isn't true.
I want to talk about our healthcare system, because, again, this is a subject that you talk about a lot, having a healthy and positive relationship with a doctor or other medical practitioner, because so much of the mechanics that we have when we go into the doctor's office, they have their BMI charts, they have, you know, weight fluctuations over time, and a lot of doctors start off an appointment with talking about a person's weight. And that can be a real barrier to getting care. It can be a real barrier to even being willing to go back to the doctor. And I know that you've said you have a great relationship with your doctor now. What characterizes a great relationship with your doctor? What do other doctors need to learn about?
This is super important, because we know that weight stigma and people perceiving that their bodies are not the size that they should be. We know that this is one of the things that precedes people developing an eating disorder. And 69% of people in this study that were surveyed said that doctors are the second most common source of weight stigma, which is exactly what you're talking about. My doctor is actually a nurse practitioner, and she's amazing. I mean, we don't need to talk about dieting. There's, like, conversations about food are handled with care because she understands that any dietary recommendations can be filled with stress and anxiety from people's history of cutting out XYZ food because they thought that it was going to make them healthier. When she's in the room with you, she really just makes you feel like she is doing everything that she can to support your health goals.
Well, and I think saying that lends a lot of clarity to the idea. So not only in embracing body positivity and body trust, you were able to shed this shame that you'd been dealing with for so long and love yourself in a new way, but it also frees you to pursue health goals, to pursue fitness without letting these preconceived notions about what people in larger bodies can and cannot do get in the way, right?
It's true, because when we internalize what everybody has told us about fat bodies and we think that we hate our bodies and that we are ashamed of our bodies. And, you know, how do we take care of something that we hate?
Sarah Thompson, we are out of time, but thank you so much for talking with me today.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Sarah Thompson will be giving the talk, But You Don't Look Like You Have an Eating Disorder and Other Avoidable Barriers to Recovery at all three state universities next week. They'll be at the University of Iowa on the 25th, the University of Northern Iowa on the 26th, and Iowa State University on the 27th. Their website is resilientfatgoddess.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.